With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Steve Tasker along with Matty Glab here at One Bills Live. We're here till 3 o'clock. Coming up in just a minute, Eric Wood will be on with us as we're waiting for his cell phone to kick on. He's out of service, which is kind of typically my problem, Matty, when I'm out and about. All of a sudden, and maybe this happens to you, all of a sudden, I live close to, the village center, and all of a sudden, one day, my phone, my wife's phone, nobody's cell phone works inside my house. That's never happened to you?
That is interesting. Do you have, no service?
It's not that interesting. I'm just waiting for Eric Wood's phone to kick on. But, we got a cell tower that's, 500 yards from the house. And doesn't that, automatically catch our signal? I mean, what's the deal?
You'd think so. Maybe that cell tower is broken.
But it all just went away. We had great cell service up until just a minute. But we'll ask Eric Wood what he thinks about it. Eric Wood coming on with us right now to join us One Bills Live. Eric, thanks for coming on. Are you doing okay in the pandemic? Everything cool? I see you're growing a little bit of a beard. Nice.
Yeah, a little beard. I guess since we're back in quarantine, I'll grow it back out.
Good. Eric, the family safe and well?
Yeah, we're all well. How about you guys?
We're all doing good. Got to ask you, too, about, we had Emily Kaplan on early in the week. She's an ESPN writer, and she did this story about and forgive me for throwing this on your lap, but she did a story about offensive linemen who trimmed down after they retired. And for those people who don't know, Eric turned into a coat hanger after he played in the NFL 300 plus. No, I'm just teasing. You look great, but you trimmed down pretty fast.
Yeah, I did. I lost 53 pounds in the first 4 months I was out of the league and kind of just maintained from there. I knew I wanted to lose the weight quick. It's hard on your knees and hard on your joints. And I had 6 lower body surgeries while I was playing in the NFL. So figured the sooner I could get the weight off, the better. And it was amazing how well I could relate to that article. And I actually got it forwarded to me by a number of people. A lot of people asking why I wasn't included. And I said, one, those guys are all generally bigger names than me. And I guess I don't post enough pictures of my shirt off.
Yeah, that may be. Well, you got to change that. You can do that from now on. We'll look for that. We'll retweet that when you do that.
Me and you will do side by sides.
Yeah. How did you do it? How'd you lose it? What was your thing?
Cut the calories. I had to eat a lot. In the article, it talks about how some guys have to struggle to keep the weight on and some struggle to keep it off. I was one of those guys that struggled to keep it on. We would go on vacation in the off season and I would inevitably lose weight. And this is, go to Mexico and eat and drink bad for 5 or 6 days. And I would come back lighter because I wasn't drinking shakes the second I woke up. I wasn't lifting in high volume to keep quantities of muscle on that were, I don't want to say artificial, but my body didn't like being 306, 310 pounds, but it paid the bills for a long time. It allowed me, to play at a fairly high level. And then whenever I was done, I knew I wanted to take it off as quick as possible.
Yeah, that article was wild to read through what these players were eating throughout the day and almost as much as 2 hour in 2 hour increments of when they had to have a snack or a meal or something. I don't think I could do that. It's incredible that offensive linemen can do that and retain that weight is what they need to do to be able to play on the field. But I want to talk to you about what's been going on in the college football landscape? We saw the Ivy League pushed their fall sports, including football, to possibly spring or next fall. They'll make a decision on that once January hits. But the Ivy League doesn't make any money on college football, so they're really not losing out on anything. They actually lose money on college football. College basketball is their moneymaker. But then we saw the Big Ten say they're only going to play conference games, and they'll do the 10 games in the 13 to 14 week span. So if the season has to get paused or anything like that, they have some time to work with. What is your thoughts on maybe some of these other Power Five conferences coming out and adopting what the Big Ten is doing or something similar?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see more small schools take the Ivy League route and delay the season, because if they aren't a high revenue team already, you take out or high revenue program, you take out the fans in attendance, so you lose the ticket sales there. And then you think about all the measures you're going to have to go through. I saw an estimation for 85 scholarship players, or most of these rosters are bigger than that. But let's say you want to test your 85 scholarship players twice a week. Based upon the current cost of tests, that'd be $17,000 a week. And a lot of programs can't afford stuff like that. So would I be surprised if a lot of smaller schools cancel football altogether for this fall? No, it wouldn't surprise me. What the crazy thing is going to come, and then are you going to allow those guys to transfer and try and make bigger schools? Do the other schools want to take them and take the risk of maybe one of them bringing in the COVID? Because a lot of programs like University of Louisville, 15 minutes from my house, they have everybody on campus working out now. And so, you know, they're in segmented workout groups and they're being very careful. But I don't know that you just want to let a bunch of transfers in right now, even if there are so many talented players around the small schools that could impact these big programs. But, you know, I think it's in everybody's hopes that at least we have some college football this season. The 10-game season would work. The funny thing is, if the ACC goes to just conference games this year, the three games Louisville gets canceled are three games against in-state schools. And so those would have been the easiest ones to travel. That's a bus trip. That's no hotels. You could travel same day, but we have those games canceled.
How likely is it, forget about college players doing this, how about pro players being disciplined enough on game day not to go over and hug an opponent or an old teammate, not switch jerseys, not stand close together on the sidelines, you know, and whatever else the myriad of protocols call for? How disciplined do you think the players are going to be able to be?
You know, I don't even know that any of those would be that big of a deal if they're doing day of game or day before the game testing. You know what I mean? If they can get these instant results, because then you would say everyone on the field does not have the coronavirus. Now you guys can go out and kind of play freely, but you have to have the timing of the test be appropriate. I think pro football has a lot better chance of looking closer to normal because these are grown men that can essentially make the decisions for themselves. Yes, I'm willing to play. If you don't want to play, then we'll have to work it out with your contract, how that all works. How does that affect the cap if one of your big guys wants to sit out this year? There's a number of things that still need to be settled, but these are grown men that can make decisions for themselves. In college, and even high school, and as you go down, there's a lot of liability that falls on the shoulders of those in charge. And that's where it disappointed me, but I understood where the NCAA kind of said they punted. The NCAA punted and said, well, we'll leave it up to the conferences, the states. And then, you know, now it's turned into, okay, now this conference can be shut down. Maybe we'll just play ourselves. We'll be able to police it better if we just play ourselves. But, I mean, you talk about an ACC schedule, and I know I keep referring back to Louisville, but I've talked on this a number of times, so it's easy for me to keep referencing it. Louisville has games that are going to be all along the East Coast in the Carolinas, in Florida. You know, you go up to Syracuse. It's, you know, these are games that are not going to be easy to travel to. You're going to have to stay at hotels. Just saying in conference does not mean lack of travel.
You were a part of the NFL pretty recently, a part of the lockout year. I mean, with the protocols that you've seen, with the language that you've seen the NFL release things, it seems like players I mean, they're not agreeing right now on preseason games. The NFLPA and the NFL, they're not agreeing on the 35% escrow that has been mentioned. What is your take on how the NFL has handled this? Another thing that I'm seeing on Twitter, at least from players who are speaking out, is that they're 3 weeks away from training camp, and there are still so many basic questions that haven't been answered to these players who are supposed to report soon.
Yeah, for the longest time, the best thing the NFL had was time. And now we're running out of that asset. You know, when all this hit in March and basketball was getting shut down and then baseball was getting ready to start up at the end of March and they got shut down, everyone just kind of had it in their hopes that everything will be back to normal by the time football rolls around. And the fact that it's not it has left us where we are now. But there was no way of the players or the owners knowing that was going to be the case. And it's just been a wait and see, wait and see, wait and see. Well, now we're at the time where some real decisions need to be made. And any time that the owners and the players have to come to an agreement on anything, it takes a while. There's just so much give and take, and there's so much money at stake. And, you know, I had this conversation with my wife last night. If I'm a second-year guy in the league and they say, hey, we want to hold 35% of your salary, I'm telling you no. You know, if I'm, you know, living in one of these expensive cities making league minimum, a second-year guy, make 500 grand, cut it in half for taxes, pay your agent, pay your financial advisor, have a residence where you're at. I mean, there's just not that much left to say, oh, yeah, hold 35% of it, please.
Yeah, and there's a lot that goes into that because you're right. It's not like they get a ton, you know, get all of it up front either. I mean, it trickles in over the course of the season. And you're right. You got to have a residence. You got to have a place to stay. And a place like San Francisco, it's a chunk. It's a big chunk. And it's a problem.
Yeah, you're out in California. You're paying 13% state tax. You're paying 39% federal tax. Then you have to have a residence somewhere near the facility, which is going to be super expensive. And there's just, you know, the overall the amount that you're left with at the end of the year if you're a young guy on a smaller deal is not that much to where and where all those guys and it's easy to say, oh, you have these billionaire owners, that why should we worry about their bills and their revenue? And you know, it's you know, not every franchise is owned by, you know, a family like the Pegulas where they own it outright. A lot of these are owned by some minority shares, and I don't know that they're looking to front the bill on this.
We're talking with Eric Wood, Bills radio color analyst. Eric, what are your thoughts on this preseason? Now, obviously, it seems likely that they're going to shorten the preseason. The league wants two preseason games. The players want zero preseason games. What's your stance on what's needed, what would help, what would hurt? You know, just how many preseason games you think is feasible, and if they don't have any, what's that going to look like?
Yeah, if they don't have any, that definitely favors the veterans making the team because you've seen them on field in the game before. So it doesn't surprise me that the player reps have interest in eliminating all the preseason games. But also, why waste your bullets? Why waste, you know, potential COVID cases from actually playing games on preseason games? I get that. There is a lot of value to preseason games for evaluation of the players. There's a ton of value in it for the players. I didn't love playing in preseason games, but I was glad I always got some action when it came week one and I was able to start the season pretty sharp. And then there'd be a few plays inevitably every year in the preseason where you're just getting your feet back under you. And a little embarrassing that you're thanking God that didn't happen week one. So there is a lot of value in the preseason, but in this current time we're in, I have to kind of be on the side of the players, especially, you know, if you're not going to be playing with fans in there anyways, maybe there's an alternative where, you know, Buffalo and Pittsburgh do an inter-squad scrimmage where you can control the environment, control the numbers, and you're driving to the game, you know, do it at a wide open facility. You know, the Bills practice facility, even at the stadium, has multiple fields, you know, space it out right. However you're going to do it, that to me would make a lot more sense.
Player opt-outs have been a topic of conversation. We've seen NBA players and MLB players opt out of this year and participating. Would you want that to be offered to NFL players? And have you had any conversations with players who are considering weighing that as an option if it's given to them?
I haven't asked anybody personally. I've tried to respect everyone's privacy from the player's perspective on this subject. But it wouldn't surprise me to see, especially some of the language that I'm seeing from social media posts from a number of players, there's a lot of concern around the coronavirus and contracting it. I think the agreement has to allow for the opt-out because, like I said before, in college, you're liable for your players. In the NFL, essentially with the players' union, you're liable for yourself. And so I think at that point you have to give these guys the option not to play this year if they're worried about contracting the virus.
What would it have taken for you to opt out of a season down these lines of a pandemic?
Wow, that's a great question. And for me, I would want enough research, as much research as I could, to figure out what measures we're going to make sure we as players are not going to contract it. That, you know, because just living in normal society, unless you're truly in an absolute strict quarantine, which I would imagine 99.9% of NFL players are not, then you have the risk of contracting it every single day just living. You have the risk of contracting other things just living your life. Okay, what are we doing as an organization, as a league, to put us in the best position? And I always kind of operated as the company guy, like, okay, I trust that you're providing us with the best resources and everything else. So I would imagine me as a player, I would be itching to get back to football if all of the measures, the appropriate measures were taking place.
Now, some NFL teams have came out and said, we're going to have fans in our stands. It's going to be a limited amount. They're going to have to wear masks. But as it is right now, the Bills won't be able to have any fans in their stands, which we've seen some players take to social media and just kind of describe how weird of a feeling that would be. How much would that change home field advantage if it stands with what Cuomo has said, where as of right now, they can't have any fans?
Yeah, it would definitely hurt the Bills because the crowd noise is so loud in Buffalo. They're so rowdy that it affects the other team's offense. You build momentum from that. You know, I think you got to figure out some way of calculating what you either go by overall league decibels, like with the limited sound decibels, with the limited fans, what does that equal out to? Okay, teams that don't have fans, you can use crowd noise up to this level. I think that makes sense. I've heard of people trying to make apps where you have 70-something thousand people at home that can make noise into their cell phone, and that seems like you're relying on a lot of technology that could get real finicky at the appropriate time. But I don't know the exact answer on what needs to happen, but I can't imagine you could say, well, since New York said that Buffalo can't have any fans, they just get no crowd noise at all this season.
Hey, Eric, your What's Next with Eric Wood podcast. You had Jerry Butler on your latest edition. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Jerry Butler, I've gotten to know through a mutual friend, and what a tremendous man he is. But one of the main reasons I wanted to have him on there is he was a part of the six initial guys that started the player development, it's also called the player engagement job in the NFL, and he was one of the six original ones. For me, I wanted to know what his advice would be to guys in the current culture of, one, the coronavirus, and two, the Black Lives Matter movement. So in regards to the coronavirus, he said, you know, as a player development guy, player engagement guy, he would be telling them, you need to come in incredible shape. You know, you don't want to let your body get worn down because then you're more susceptible to contracting a virus. That's just general rules with getting sick. But also you want to stand out when you get there. And he told a story about how he started running long distance with the track team at a school at Clemson in his NFL off seasons to get in immaculate shape. And that allowed him to have really productive seasons early in his career, make a Pro Bowl and all that. And then also on the Black Lives Matter movement, he had some great takes, and I'll let listeners tune in and let him say them exactly, so I don't paraphrase something differently than he would want it expressed. But he had incredible insights as a black man himself, who is a strong Christian man, extremely intelligent. I just thought he had incredible words on both matters.
Eric, thanks for taking some time, man. I appreciate it. It's great to see you. You look great. We can see you on Skype. Our listeners can't, but they'll have to take our word for it. Hope you're doing well, and thanks for coming on.
No, I appreciate it. At some point, we got to get some golfing in, Steve, I'm assuming now with the One Bills Live that cuts into some of your golf time.
Actually, yeah, a little bit. I actually went out yesterday. I had to stop. I was playing so bad yesterday. Do you have an embarrassing moment from the golf course just in passing? Do you have anything that you can confess to us that you did on the golf course that you rather people didn't know?
Well, I admitted 2 days ago, so I had a match. We do this like NCAA tournament style bracket at my country club, and me and a partner were playing, guys. We were playing off a scratch and a five, and then they were off of a 17 and a 19. So one of the holes, one of the guys got two strokes, and they stroked on every other hole, both of them. And so we were up by two holes with four to go, and it starts pouring down rain. And they make four consecutive pars and close us out. And, like, I came home, and I was still so mad, like, an hour and a half later. I was telling my wife, I was like, I don't quite remember like how mad I got after each individual Bills loss, but I would argue that I'm more mad about this right now than maybe one of the losses in my career. And that's so pathetic, but like, that's what I got to compete at nowadays. And I mean, like, I'm still mad.
I feel it, bro. I feel your pain. It happens to me all the time as well. That's great. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.